I find that people who can give kudos are also people who can hire people who may be better than them in certain areas.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That allows the team to grow. And it's a lot better solution than the person who's all about me and will only hire people that are not as good as him, because he basically delivers on a worse team structure.
You're listening to the AngleFreeIT.com podcast, IT career and culture advice with a heavy dose of reality. And now your host, the guy who had to explain what salty culture meant to his grandma over the holidays, Preston Kilburn.
Okay, navigators, here we go. We are interviewing none other than Mike McRitchie. He is an amazing blogger and has a lot of experience to share with us today. So, Mike, I am just going to lead it off by asking you, you know, in a few minutes or so, sort of tell us your origin story. How did you start doing this, you know, helping people with their career search and LinkedIn and all of the things that you offer to folks?
Great. Well, kind of how I started, I was kind of a science computer nerd back in high school, and computers were just starting to come out. And so I took some computer classes, liked them, and then started to pursue my computer science degree in college, and started through that. Halfway through, realized that that wasn't my ideal gig for me, and changed over to econ to wrap up along with the statistics minor. So I kind of have that technical background. And then as I got out into the work world, I found that people like to come to me with lots of computer questions, whether it was friends, family, work, whatever. So I kind of moved in and out of that world. But what it basically did for me is it gave me a good grounding. And then from there, I took off into a variety of roles to figure out my industry. Started with telecom, working as a contractor for AT&T. Then went over, did residential real estate sales for a handful of months. And then joined up a healthcare consulting firm of about 10 people. And they asked me on day one, do you know how to do Lotus 1-2-3, which was the precursor to Excel?
Nice.
I figured out that I could use the slash key to get the commands. And I figured if I'm a computer science guy, I can probably figure out the rest from there. So I made that work, started putting together partnerships, joint ventures, and financial forecasts for various things that they were putting together with the doctors. But then pretty early on, I realized that my career wasn't there because I didn't have any healthcare background and I would need to find something that I could actually make a career out of. So happenstance, I had a friend who was in property management, commercial property management, and she suggested I join her company. So I did that, became a commercial property manager, managing several buildings, did that for about 3 years. And then through another networking opportunity, found out the company was adding a telecom division. And it was just as they were starting to build the second round of cell sites after AT&T and Verizon had done their thing. And I got to work on the first Sprint rollout in Northern California, which was acquiring property for sites. And it was kind of a funny story. I started out being the computer guy. And after a week, they found out I had a real estate license and said, we need you to do this instead. So did all those things. That project went on for about a year and a half. And then I was out of work. So trying to figure out where to go next. Guy that I worked for was working out in Ohio and said, hey, do you want to come work for me? Pay is good. And yeah, you can start right away if you can get out here. Well, coming from California to Ohio was about a 9-day trip. I said, sure, let me pack up my stuff and go. So packed everything up, called him, said, I'm on my way out. I'll be there in 9 days. I'll look you up when I get there. He says, well, that job's not happening anymore. And I said, well, I'm taking a vacation. It's a 9-day vacation, and I'll call you when I get out there. So I did that, went out there. He says, well, the opportunity in Cincinnati isn't existing anymore, but if you want to get to Cleveland tomorrow, I might have an opportunity for you. So I drove to Cleveland and arrived there and started work that day, working the Nextel project. So did that. Hi. And kind of rotated through telecom on to Seattle, worked there for 17 years, and then back to California, where I focus now. And through all that, I learned a lot about business. I learned a lot about hiring, firing, contractor work, employee work, the whole gig. I became a project manager, program manager, director of operations, the whole kind of kit and caboodle. And through that, I had a lot of things that I learned and had fun with. And so at some point I said, I got all this information in my head. How am I going to turn this into something that's valuable that helps people? So I started to think about business consulting and then found out that pretty much all my LinkedIn contacts were employees and said, all right, let's consider resume writing instead. Did that and it turned out pretty well. Started up a blog and talked about business and career topics and seemed to connect with people. So that's kind of how I arrived at today, through a kind of a long round of happenstances and really just kind of enjoy the process.
Nice. No, I like it. I like it. And I, you know, for listeners, you know, of the podcast, I actually found out about Mike through another podcast. And I was like, oh my gosh, I have to talk to this guy. We must know his secrets. So, okay. So you've been around, you know, telecom and IT for a while, and obviously, you know, things are different now than when you started, right? When you started, it was like,
absolutely,
hey, you know how to turn this thing on and hit the slash key. Now, you know, it's a little bit different of a field. You know, what if you were you, you know, when you started out, you know, from college, where would you tell people to focus their skill building today? You know, if they were just entering IT, had no proclivity for, you know, development or systems or networking or anything, what do you see as like a real growth area?
Well, I think kind of when I look at careers in general, there's kind of a couple different phases. The first phase is that learning phase, and you're coming out of high school or you're coming out of college and you've kind of been in that sitting in class learning routine for a while, and now you jump into the work world. And the first thing people kind of are shocked about is how work is a little bit different than what they're used to in the educational world. And so there's an adjustment period there. And you're really at that point trying to figure out, what do I want to do with my life and what am I really good at? And so the first part, really the first 3 to 5 years, you're just trying to learn things, test things, figure things out. And it's really all about trying to get it dialed in for yourself. You need to be able to really figure out what your strengths are. If you're doing certain types of coding, what do you enjoy? What are you good at? What types of projects do you enjoy working on? Do you like working remote? Do you like working in a work group that's in person, you know, on the web? How do you really do your best work? So that's part of it, is just kind of figuring it out. And then from that, it may lead you to certain types of technologies, softwares, certain hardware platforms, whatever. And that's really, you're trying to act more like a sponge and just get things figured out. And then as you are doing that, you're also trying to essentially network with people. Mm-hmm. I definitely coach people on jumping to other companies throughout their learning curve, because they're going to find each environment is a little bit different and you're going to get different pieces of the puzzle that you're going to figure out at each company or in each role you're in. So really that first 3 to 5 years, you're just figuring it out. And the goal is to learn as much as possible and to connect with as many people as possible, because many of those people you'll find you're working with in some form or fashion throughout your career.
Yeah, totally. Totally. And networking is so huge. And I don't know why it's not well talked about in the IT industry. I feel like it's picking up and people are sort of picking up on that, you know, with with the invention of Meetup and stuff like that. I don't know if by pathos, you know, we're just intrinsically a little bit hermit-like, you know?
Exactly.
But you know, that for me, you know, I'm a fairly outgoing type A personality. And still, the first couple times I went to meetup groups or user groups and stuff like that, it was a little intimidating because my thought was, oh God, I'm going to walk in and these people know everything about this technology and I'm going to look like a moron. And then I showed up and then I realized, actually, no, we're all just trying to figure it out together. So that's cool. That's good to know. So let's talk about entering the workforce. From your perspective, you know, I asked this question to everybody, and it's a huge topic outside of IT, but I think it's a little bit different in IT because it's way harder to draw a line. What do you feel about with degrees? Do you think people should enter into IT with a degree? Are they at an advantage if they don't? Like, what are you seeing with the people you work with?
Well, I think degrees tend to have some pros and cons associated with them. Kind of the classic need for a degree was it showed that you had the ability to finish something and put in the time and effort and stick with it. So from a hiring perspective, it's kind of something that gives you a certain amount of safety as an employer to be able to know that they were somebody who could stick with something. So skill-wise, I've found that college degrees in IT are pretty useless. You know, you learn some skills, but a lot of times the skills are dated. They're not cutting edge. And so if you're going to do that, that's fine. But when you get out, you're going to find that you're pretty much drinking from a fire hose in terms of learning. You're going to have to get up to speed quickly, and you're going to have to learn some things that are current and impactful in the IT world today. And, you know, I experienced the same thing with my, you know, I was taking computer programming classes. I learned, you know, early on BASIC and then Pascal and Fortran and C++, things that, you know, people think are dinosaurs now. But the reality was when I was learning those things, I think C at the time was the primary language and they weren't even really teaching that in college. So I felt like it really wasn't providing job skills. It was providing more of a platform of knowledge and learning ability and the ability to think and plan and make things happen. And so that you carry over into the job world, albeit the platforms, you don't necessarily do that.
Yeah, totally. And so tell me your feeling, you know, philosophy, if you will. So I personally am a graduate of WGU. So I, just like you, started out from high school and I went to a very expensive, you know, private college here in Denver. That's where I'm from. You know, paying $25,000 a year for this quota. I'm using finger quotes, even though we're on a podcast. IT business CS degree. And, you know, at the time it was 1999. And I went in and they were talking about Windows 3.0, Windows 3.1 maybe, and Windows NT. And I was like, well, when are we going to learn about Windows 2000 and server Linux and stuff like that? And they're like, oh, we're not going to have curriculum for that for a few years. So I took a step back and I was like, I'm not going to get a job learning these skills. Like the business stuff that I'm learning here is amazing. And then at the time, you know, it was the .com era and I didn't need a degree because I was going to work at a .com and be a millionaire. You know, the rest is history and I was not a millionaire from my .com, but I learned a lot of hard knock experience from that. So what do you feel about these new blended degrees? So I went, but my whole roundabout story was I ended up going back to school and I went to Western Governors University. The reason I loved it, and it's very, I mean, oh my gosh, it's a flashpoint because I have friends who are college professors that, you know, want to burn effigies of my school, but it's pass fail and it's based a lot on certifications in the IT field, right? So instead of some professor who wrote a CCNA course 15 years ago, you just go take a CBT and then you go pass the CCNA and then you pass the class. But not only did you pass the class, you now have a CCNA. So talk about your experience with some of that. Did you think that's more common in the education arena? Like are more of the, I guess, brick and mortar colleges moving to that area, do you think?
I've seen more brick and mortar just going to internet-based education. But a lot of what I've seen them do in that arena is essentially taking brick and mortar and turning it into the internet, but not really truly leveraging the platform.
Gotcha.
Yeah, there's some things in terms of forums and ways of doing things to have a little more interaction. But I feel like with the IT world, it's kind of been out there that there's kind of that core college degree scenario, which when really was starting out from the IT perspective, it was really the only game in town. But then really things evolved anywhere from, I think, when Novell came out with their networking stuff and they had their certifications. That was really kind of the initial wave of certifications being a way to tell if somebody really knew anything. Mm-hmm. Now, you could still study for the course and do things like that in order to be able to pass and not necessarily be a great programmer or coder in each of those arenas, but it was a start down that road. And I feel like in the IT world, it's more about performance than anything else, performance and networking, but it's not so much about formal education tells you that you're going to be good for this role. And so I don't think that the college degree route, although it can be an added benefit, to me, it doesn't seem like it's any kind of ticket to success that some of the other majors might have. You know, if you're in engineering, yeah, you got to go to college. It's really the only route. If you're looking for liberal arts education, any college generally will do. There's no need to overpay for a private college. If you're in IT, there's enough resources out there. Just go do it, learn it, jump into the middle of it, find some companies who are doing things that are interesting, test out your skills. You'll figure out pretty quickly if you have any aptitude for it and interest in it. And then from there, you can leverage it. And you may find that you go back. I would say they probably get more benefit out of a college degree in terms of more like a business degree than the IT side of the degree, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah, totally. Totally. That's really interesting. So, okay. So let's talk about how you did this pivot to help people with resumes and LinkedIn and stuff. So, so give me an example of, you know, someone that you've really worked with and you've been, you know, really proud of them. Hopefully, you know, somebody in IT if possible. To, you know, if there's somebody listening to this podcast who's just sort of frustrated and feels stuck, you know, what sunshine can we share?
Yeah, so I was working with this one guy who was in the IT field. He'd been in it for, I don't know, about 20 years, and he'd been working various contract jobs and was looking for something more permanent and more close to home. He didn't want to have long commutes and things like that. So he was a really good generalist. He had a variety of coding skills and different software knowledge and projects that he'd done over the years. And he had a quite a laundry list of projects under his belt. And he had a good college education background that kind of married up to that. But he was trying to figure out what to do next and how to make this thing happen. And so in going through it, he was kind of on the fence of, should he go more the coding route and talk about the current platforms and what he's done, or should he talk more the generalist route? And kind of where I suggested he go was, because at the level he was at, the benefit to a company, he could find more value as a generalist and being like that in-house IT leader, because he had a couple things going for him. Number one, he was technically proficient, but he also had good people skills in terms of empathy and ability to translate IT speak into English. And so that was really what he brought to that situation. He wasn't the expert coder in some special language that he was going to be able to charge a mint for. So kind of being more of the managerial level IT person, that was his opportunity. But he started there, and we went through things and kind of got his resume in place, and then worked on his LinkedIn profile and got that in place as well. And he went out there and started going after some jobs and got some interviews. And then he ran into kind of a bump in the road. He found out that he was struggling with the initial question of an interview, which is, tell me about yourself. And he just kind of freaked out when he got the question, because he knew how to do the work. But when he talked about himself, it wasn't something he did every day. And he was kind of nervous about it and struggled with it. Mm-hmm. And so he was kind of bombing interview after interview. And he's like, I need to get this thing figured out. So we did a mock interview call. And I just asked him that question. I said, you know, let me listen to how you answer this. So I asked him the question, tell me about yourself. And he started going into it. And pretty quickly, I could tell it was not going in the direction that he wanted to go. So it was good. I listened to him and kind of heard what he was struggling with, and pointed out a few areas that he could answer a slightly different way. And kind of also followed up with, you know, you're good. You know what you're doing. Here's the things you're really good at. You have no reason to fear. You have all this stuff nailed. So, you know, run with this thing. And in talking it through with him, he found out I was kind of more of a cheerleader for him than anything else. And he's like, oh, I didn't realize that. Okay, I can do this. So we went through it a few times. We had him redo that answer about 3 or 4 times. And then he applied that in the next opportunity and ended up landing the job. So it was really cool for me, because I wasn't helping him be a better IT guy. He already had that figured out. It was really a combination of positioning him so that he understood what set him apart, and then helping him get through kind of just the interview skills so that he could be successful communicating that.
That's awesome. I love that. So that sort of dovetails into my other question, and I think you answered it, but maybe you could expand upon it. So if somebody wants to, let's say, get a promotion or a new position inside their company, or they just feel like they're not really appreciated well at work, how do you advise people to basically build their brand without, because I know a lot of people, they're like, well, I don't want to do that. I don't want to sound cocky, because I hate people that do that. You know, the only people I know that do that are terrible people. So how would you give people advice to build their brand?
Mm-hmm. Well, I was kind of one of those people. I was kind of the humble, quiet type, and half the time, you know, it was a month in and before they knew I spoke. And so it was kind of strange that way. But what I found was, there were some ways to communicate it without it coming across as bragging. And it's one that I've kind of used in my career that's helped keep people aware of my accomplishments without it coming across as bragging. And what it ends up doing is it allows you to promote yourself effectively without coming across as bragging, and without just not doing it and finding that your career just stalls. So, what I've done there is, number one is actually track your accomplishments. And this is something that almost nobody does. If you do it, you'll find it'll help you in a lot of ways you just didn't anticipate. So a lot of companies have annual review processes. And what happens is you get to 2 weeks or a week before the annual review, you get the notice from the HR person, and they say you need to knock this out in the next week. And so what everybody does is they go, oh, what did I do this year? Mm-hmm. And they start trying to take notes. And basically they remember everything over the last 1 to 3 months, and that's it. And so they basically didn't do themselves any justice. So from the review perspective and for future resume writing, if you can at least once a month or once a quarter, if not weekly, note what you've done. it is amazing what will happen if you do that. I've done it one time where I just did it weekly. Mm-hmm. By the end of the year, I think I had like 47 accomplishments versus if I didn't do it, I had about 3 to 5.
Yeah. So
it is amazing. That's awesome. If you actually focus on that. And that way you just kind of send it to yourself in an email or whatever, keep a, you know, job file or whatever you want to call it. So I put those things in it, my notes throughout the year. You can even do a single email and just add to it each week. And then if I get anything that's kind of a kudos from a boss or a client or a coworker, I just shoot that email to myself as well. And then when it's ready for review time or to put together a resume, I go to that little folder and just start pulling things out. So it's a great way to trigger those ideas and those accomplishments. And it allows you to make a lot more accomplishment-driven resume and annual review that's more likely to demonstrate to your boss that you actually do work and it's not something they're guessing at. So that's one. And then the other one I do is kind of like people do name dropping, which is really annoying. I do this one, which is kind of share a story about something we did. So if there was something good that happened on a project or interesting on a project, and this is where logging this stuff helps, but you'll even come across it just naturally. What you'll do is you'll tell a story about something that was going on. Well, by default, they're going to attribute the story to you because you were involved in it. And that accomplishment, although it may have been a team accomplishment, you will get a certain amount of credit in terms of being memorable to the people around you. And that's really what you're going for, is that they understand that you do things that make a difference. And it doesn't have to be over the top. You don't have to say, I did this, that nobody likes to hear the I's. But when you share a story about what we did as a team and you give kudos to somebody on the team, you get a certain amount of goodwill through that process. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, giving kudos to other people has been so helpful for me in my career. Because naturally, when you give kudos to someone else, they like you more and mm-hmm. you're making them look good. And I swear, you help other people in their career, it comes back to you time and a half every single time. Like I've never stopped to help somebody and been like, that was stupid. I shouldn't have done that. Even if it takes exactly. a few years, it comes back to you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Yeah, so I think along with that is it's not about equaling the score. I did this and I got that. It's just the fact that when you're doing that and when you're giving, people also view you as not intimidated by people. I find that people who can give kudos are also people who can hire people who may be better than them in certain areas.
Oh, yeah.
And that allows the team to grow. And it's a lot better solution than the person who's all about me and will only hire people that are not as good as him, because he basically delivers on a worse team structure. But if you have the confidence that you can hire good people, in some cases you can even pay them more than you're making, and you get the best of the best and the best like to work together, well then everybody gets the benefits from that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, so on our website, we've got these, you know, 6 pillars that I talk about. And it's just, you know, me, I've been in IT 20 years and I've been on some pretty high performing teams and I've been on some pretty low performing teams. And I've just had a really good opportunity to observe the high performers and the low performers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at times those have both described me. You know, I've been a low performer and I've been a high performer. Currently, I'm blessed to say I'm a high performer.
Yep.
You know, pillar number 6 is, you know, make sure that you're the dumbest person in the room, if at all possible. And not to, not to talk badly about yourself, but if you look around the five people that you spend the most time around with at work, you know, I don't have statistics to back this up. I was looking for it, but you know, it's at least, you know, folklore that I have found to be true that, you know, the five people you hang around, they very much dictate how you perform and how you're going to act. And you know, if you look and you are the smartest person and the best performing person, you may really want to consider that. And you may want to look at jumping teams, jumping positions, because you're not going to grow in that position, or pull some people up to your level, you know, set higher expectations for them if that's a thing.
Absolutely.
So let's talk, you know, when you're stuck or when you feel stuck, I know you worked with, you were sharing a story about a client that you helped, you know, get out of a position. Share some motivation that we can give to listeners who just maybe feel stuck, but are super scared to make a jump. Like, this position is really comfortable. This company's been good to me for years and I don't want to let them down. How would you counsel people in that position?
Well, I think the biggest thing is you got to be in the role for the reasons that work for you. And you can't use somebody else's model and say, oh, I should do this or I should do that. You don't want to run your life based on your parents' models or your friend's model or what somebody told you to do or said this is the best way to go and all that kind of stuff. You need to figure it out for yourself. But given that, one of my measurements for myself was always I'm learning and growing, because for me, learning and growing was an important value to me. So I found myself progressing generally quickly through a variety of roles in a company and learning and growing and having a lot of fun in the process. And then at a certain point for me, I am not a big fan of the drudgery of daily operations, despite being a director of operations at one point. The only thing that really kept me excited about that was that the company was growing rapidly.
Yeah.
But for me, I wasn't a stay put and ride it out, even though I liked security to some extent. I needed to learn and grow. So in that instance, my measuring stick was, am I learning and growing, or is there a way that I can leverage within the company I'm at now to do more learning and growing? Can I offer to take on a project? Can I raise my hand for some opportunity that's out there? I'll look at that first before I, you know, jump ship. But ultimately, if you feel like that's important to you and you're not doing it, you're not learning, you're not growing, and that's a key indicator in your mind of success, then you have to do what's right for you. And it could be a combination of things. You could do it, some learning and growing on the side, whether that's, hey, I'm going to learn a new language, I'm going to try something, do a side freelance project with a friend and really test my skills in a certain area that I might be able to bring back to the company I'm working with, and maybe propose something unique or out there that the company can take advantage from as well. Or do I need to look for something else, and what's going to prepare me for that next step? There's no reason to get scared about it, other than the fact that in my mind, I wouldn't be quitting the job and hoping for the next job. I would not be quitting the job until I had that next one lined up.
Yeah.
Particularly when you're in that situation that you just relayed, because you know, if you're scared of what's out there, you want to do everything in your power to make it as smooth of a transition as you can. But I do think that if you're stuck and you're feeling like you're not going anywhere and this is not the right fit for the next phase of your life, then it is time to look at it. And it can be scary. You know, I've changed industries. I've changed companies a lot of times. Sometimes I've been let go and had to do it on the fly. And all those relationships you build and all the experiences that you've had and the accomplishments that you've attained over the years all come together to help you be successful in that next opportunity as well as finding that next opportunity.
Yeah. And I just want to hit on what you just said, Mike, is that, you know, listeners, I'm sure everybody in IT has a pretty solid grasp of how a podcast happens, but, you know, behind the scenes, I reach out to these amazing folks that have, you know, experience to share with us. And it is striking to me how many commonalities I've just been hearing and hearing and that have been occurring. And it's so funny to me, the importance on networking and developing relationships. I literally have not talked to one person yet who hasn't said in some form or another, yeah, you got to find your people, you got to network, you've got to get out there and talk to people. And I think that's really important. You know, that's a drum that I'm going to continue to hit, especially in the IT area where it may feel like when you're on Reddit and people know your screen name, they know you, but nobody on Reddit is going to recommend you for a job. I mean, maybe there's a few people that out there that may do that. I wouldn't, you know? And so, you know, it's really important that you have those face-to-face communication, human-to-human relations that, you know, it's just so important.
Absolutely. It's so great to hear that. No, I think that that's an important point. It's one that actually, for me myself, I've been more kind of introverted throughout my career, and you know, I have connections through LinkedIn and all those kinds of things. But even for me recently, I've kind of pushed myself out of my comfort zone and said, okay, I need to reach out to people more often on the phone, on Skype. Like I contacted somebody in Israel last month, and another person in Trinidad and Tobago, and another guy in Canada, and just said, hey, this is the internet age. We can do these kinds of things. It's not outside the norm. And what I found was everybody has awesome stories. And as you're sharing them, you're connecting with them. And often those relationships turn into opportunities. So for instance, I'll kind of give you a side direction on this. I was doing this thing for my nephew. He's into drones, and he wanted to get into the drone business, and he wanted my guidance on it. So I said, okay, I'm not going to buy a drone. I have no interest in it. Yeah, it's cool, but I'm not going to spend several thousand dollars to get nice drones that I'm not going to fly, but I'm interested in helping the business. So he signed me up for some Facebook groups for drones, and I started checking them out. I'm going, okay. And I said, oh, maybe I'll write a blog post for the drone group. And I just said, question to the group, what is the first paid drone gig you got? And tell me that story. So I got some stories back, and I put it into a blog post, and it became my number one blog post of all time. And the reason why was I asked people to share their stories. Then I shared their stories. Then I told them I shared their stories, and they shared them with their friends. So it was about that connection. That one wasn't really a personal connection, but then that turned into a guy contacted me and said, I'd like you to write a blog post for my site. So I did. He paid me $50 for the post. It wasn't a whole lot, but it was kind of nice. And then later he says, hey, Mike, you know, can you help me find a new agency? Because he was doing this kind of new IT related project in the drone and solar space, basically having drones check out rooftops before they get quotes. And it was kind of an interesting subject. And he'd tried to run a pay-per-click campaign that went nowhere. He got lots of traffic, but he didn't get any conversions. And I said, well, let me take a look at it. And you know, did you do this and that and the other thing? He's like, Mike, you seem to know about marketing. Can you just kind of handle this for me and figure it out? So I kind of jumped into that, doing essentially a marketing guide role to help him through it. And it was kind of fun because I'd been working on similar things in my own business. Mm-hmm. And it was just something that essentially occurred from something else that occurred from something else. It wasn't planned. It wasn't anything that I went in, I just shared information and tried to help them as much as I can. In a lot of cases, it wasn't even paid. It was just, you know, you're interesting. I want to talk to you. I want to help you. Maybe there's something down the road. And that's typically how good networking happens.
Yeah, definitely. That's awesome. That's kind of, so one thing that I talk about, and I share a lot, probably, I should probably share more on my site than I do on Reddit, but I spent a lot of time in the IT career advice subreddit. And recently there've been a lot of people who are like, oh yeah, you know, I'm thinking about doing this, you know, side gig thing. And I never thought to do this until, I came to a position where my wife was quitting her job and I was working out at a very expensive gym, and I love my gym, but it's very expensive. And I didn't, you know, I think at the time it was just $130 or $140 a month per person. I was like, I don't $240 a month love this. And so I just, you know, I set myself a little goal and I was like, you know what, this is stupid. People pay me a lot of money per hour, you know, through my company, of course, to go do stuff. Why couldn't I do something similar? You know, not breaking, you know, conflict of interest type stuff with work, but why couldn't I market myself? And, you know, that has been the most refreshing and interesting thing for me, is because I have never understood business people better than when I had to market myself, make a cold call, talk to people, bargain with them and barter with them when they're like, no, I don't agree. I don't think you should cost that much per hour, you know, and you have to sell yourself, you know, a little bit. It's it's totally scary. And the first time somebody tells you, you know what, no way, I am never paying that much per hour for you. You have to get through that. You have to get over that, you know, with that, you know, but I will never not have a side business just because of that experience. You know, it makes you much better, you know, it makes you a much better business person. And by the way, you learn all these, you know, if you stay in tech, you know, tech, you learn all these side things that, you know, what you would never learn otherwise.
So. Yeah. And I think that's huge. And kind of the turning point for me was, I'd always kind of had these little side business ideas that never went anywhere. I ended up being called by my family the business card guy. Get a business card and never do anything with it. Nice. And so when I kind of got into the resume thing, I find it, hey, I actually got somebody to pay me something for this. And then that kind of moved up from there as I got better at what I did and learned my niche a little bit better. It kind of moved along. But it was, for me, it was something I was interested in anyway, and I probably would have done it for free, and I had done it for free over the years. So my justification, and this is kind of the guy thing with the wife who's going, why are you spending all this money on all these educational things that they think you don't need, is, and this is kind of the same thing I told to the drone guys, I said, get your side hustle going. So when you buy that big drone toy or you sink all this money into education that they think is worthless, you can say, hey, this is converting to money. See, and I'm covering my expenses. And then along with that, the neat thing about the side hustle approach is there really isn't any pressure. Once you kind of, you know, cause a lot of these, you can start up pretty inexpensively. A lot of times it's just your time. So you can make things happen without having to generate a six-figure salary off the bat, right?
So
it allows you the freedom to learn and grow and get better at it and develop your skills and your reputation. And then back to your point, it also develops some business skills, which ultimately will help you wherever you're at, whether as an employee, as a contractor, or running your own business. Those skills are priceless because they truly connect you with the customer and help you understand how a company actually makes money. And if you understand that, that moves you up several steps ahead of the guy who can just code.
Definitely. Definitely. So, well, let's focus real quick. If people wanted to reach out to you, Mike, what do you offer to folks, and how would they find you?
Yeah. So the easiest way to get a hold of me is through my website, which is mikemcritchie.com. And really, there's two areas of expertise I have right now that I'm working. One is on the career side, and the other is on the small business side. Both have a pretty similar approach, which is basically helping you more effectively understand yourself and market yourself. And so on the career side, I focus on writing resumes and LinkedIn profiles. And the way I go about it is a little different than typical. So I work with the person. Generally, they send me their resume. That's their old one. I jump on a phone call with them for about an hour. And I kind of talk through their experience and help them uncover the accomplishments that they've often forgotten about and the cool stories that really help them connect with someone who might be reading the resume or in an interview situation where they can really talk about something that they're excited and passionate about, which will help the hiring manager or recruiter think that this person is somebody that should be on their team rather than somebody who's got a boring resume and they're just kind of going through the motions and they're nervous and whatever. I find that if you have good things to talk about, it solves a lot of the problems. And so we uncover that through that process. And then I create those essentially marketing materials for them so that they can either land that job that they're going after, or in some cases, it's strictly just to help them figure out the next point in their career or get a progression within the existing company they're in. And so I do that. It's my nighttime job and evening job and lunchtime job. And the type of thing that you do, you fit into the mix. But what I've found is the experience I've had in the kind of the tech field and through lots of levels of management has really helped that. And then also I do some consulting with staffing companies. So that gives me additional perspective on how they think and how to work within their systems.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, recruiters are, they're a tough nut to crack at some time, you know, it's,
they are.
And I would say, you know, the challenge that, you know, I do similar stuff, probably not to the level that you do, Mike. I'll just be straight up honest with you, but you know, I do similar stuff and I tend to help a little more junior folks, and the most, you know, clairvoyant answer I can give to junior folks that are working with recruiters is to cut them a little bit of slack and realize they're probably the same age as you and they have a sales and marketing degree and they don't know anything about technology. And you need to talk to them like they're a salesperson and get them excited about you. And then you will most likely get that job. Because that is the one thing I realized is all of the really good recruiters go recruit guys like me and Mike, right? Like they're paid the big bucks to recruit the people who are really hard to find. So when you're starting out, you're working with the new guy, and the new guy, maybe not the best. So
very true.
So that is very cool. Well, you know, if you are considering, you know, moving positions, you know, check out the show notes and we'll have links to Mike and, you know, his services. If you're looking for a really, really quick guide to consider when you have interviews, head to the website and you can download the checklist that we made to just basically mentally prep you, get you ready for that interview, you know, uncover the stupid gotchas that I've stumbled over the years. And I just, Mike, I really appreciate you taking time out of your schedule. You're a busy guy. You run multiple jobs and it's really, and I'm just really grateful that you took time to talk to me and talk to my listeners. And again, if you guys need, you know, if you need assistance, reach out to Mike. He's really good. And I think he would be a great resource for you.
I appreciate it, Preston. And I had a lot of fun with the interview.
All right. Talk to you later. And I hope you guys are having a great day.